position of the international community, that's the position of the UN, and that is that's what the international legality is saying. So the international climate system shouldn't operate in a different way from the international system. Justice is indivisible. It goes for the political settlement of the conflict, but also it goes for the legal status of the territory. And we are asking for a climate justice. Climate justice will involve that Western Sahara, the data on Western Sahara, should be excluded from the Moroccan reports, because Western Sahara has never been part of Morocco. That's the UN stand.
That's Obi Bashir, the Polisario Front's Europe representative and climate change consultant Nick Brooks, who's worked with Western Sahara on its climate plan. We spoke to them at the UN Climate Summit last week. That does it for our show. If you want to see our documentary, 4 Days in Occupied Western Sahara, a rare look inside Africa's last colony, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring for a web and new media coordinator. Our web and new media coordinator is responsible for KBOO's website and social media accounts. Applicants should have experience administering a CMS such as Drupal and experience administering a MySQL database, including backups and queries. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit kboo.fm/employment. Applications are due by November 17th. KBOO is an affirmative action and equal opportunity employer.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland School Board votes no on vaccine mandate. House of Representatives censors Paul Gosar over video depicting murder. And in international news, migrants freeze at the Polish border while Russia considers war. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 17th, 2021. I'm Ethan Sandweiss. Reynolds Middle School is canceling in-person learning for around 3 weeks. Staff will be developing safety protocols and social-emotional support to address student fights and inappropriate behavior, which they say reflect the unique social impact of COVID-19 on developing minds. Assistant Director of Public Relations for the Reynolds School District, Steve Padilla, says that student misbehavior has created new safety issues and disrupted in-person learning. Padilla also acknowledged several similar incidents at Reynolds High School, which will address delinquency while staying open. Carly Strauss, a school psychologist for Salem-Keizer Public Schools, said, quote, "What we are advocating is for more mental health professionals in our schools because we are definitely in a mental health crisis." Residents of Oregon's Warm Springs Reservation hope Biden's Build Back Better plan can fix longstanding problems with their water supply. The reservation's tap water is undrinkable when it comes through faucets at all. Biden's spending package allocates $11 billion for Native communities. The Oregon State House is prioritizing $250 million for clean water projects alone. Danny Martinez, manager of emergency services for Warm Springs, said he cried of joy when he heard the bill was passed. Still, residents regret that access to safe water has to be a fight. Warm Springs resident and mother, Justine Kyo, told Oregon Public Broadcasting, quote, "It is really tough to see some people be happy over clean water when they should just have clean water at their house." Third-party utility suppliers can charge consumers up to 8 times as much for gas and electric in deregulated states. These companies tend to prey on seniors, immigrants, and the working class. A new online toolkit can help customers realize when they're being overcharged. Here's Diane Bernard.
About 60 million American households get their energy from third-party suppliers, and a new online toolkit helps these consumers make sure they're not being overcharged. Many don't realize that gas and electric suppliers in Maryland and other deregulated states offer so-called teaser rates. The charges start off low, but end up increasing over time. According to Tammy Bresnahan with AARP Maryland, she points out door-to-door salespeople from these suppliers target seniors, immigrants, and low-income neighborhoods neighborhoods, often those who can least afford the higher rates.
What they're doing is perfectly legal. However, after like a three-month introductory rate, the cost goes to a variable rate. And what we've seen in some cases that the rate will go five times more than what they would have been paying if they would have stayed with their regulated utility.
She warns most people sign up for the bargain rate, then forget about it until they notice their bills have increased. To help, the toolkit from AARP provides a worksheet to help folks do the math and compare prices, along with a video and fact sheets. It's available on the AARP Maryland website. Energy advocate Laurel Peltier developed the material for the toolkit. She notes the average Maryland family spends about $2,000 a year on utility bills. She thinks it's important to read the fine print because third-party suppliers can end up costing a family an additional $400 a year.
We're really good at shopping for other products, but we're not very good at shopping for home energy. And we will only benefit if we're smarter and we check our bills. And we're very careful when a salesman comes to the door and says you're going to save money.
Maryland is one of 14 states, including New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania, that have deregulated both gas and electricity. She notes since 2010, families in deregulated states have paid a total of $19 billion more for their energy when choosing a retail or third-party supplier instead of a regulated utility. For Maryland News Connection, I'm Diane Bernard.
The Portland School Board voted yesterday against a vaccine mandate for students age 12 and older. Board members cited data showing that 78.8% of Multnomah County children ages 12 to 17 have already received at least one dose. The school board was prepared to pass the mandate on October 26th when unmasked adult protesters forced them to suspend a meeting. Board members agreed that they may revisit the topic. The decision goes against the wishes of Portland Public School students. In a survey of 1,800 middle and high schoolers, 89% said that they support a vaccine mandate. The school board student representative, Jackson Weinberg, argues that a mandate would improve both physical and mental health. Weinberg said, quote, "While we think all students are safe going back to school right now, there are students who don't feel safe going to school, and we need to take that seriously. If we're not going forward with this vaccine mandate, then we need to go forward with other mitigation strategies. The fully vaccinated may be changing to include a booster shot," Dr. Anthony Fauci said in a recent interview. Fauci cited the highly transmissible Delta variant as a major factor. While unvaccinated Americans remain more vulnerable, even those with two vaccine doses are at risk as their immunity wanes. The FDA is considering whether to recommend a booster shot to all adults. The chief factor in the spread of COVID remains vaccine hesitancy. Around 40% of Americans are not fully vaccinated, and more than a quarter of Americans say they won't ever get a vaccine or remain skeptical about getting one. The World Health Organization urges wealthy countries to refrain from issuing booster shots until they've supplied the developing world with vaccines. The estimated number of overdose deaths in the U.S. rose 28.5% between April 2020 and April 2021. New overdose data today by the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics. President Biden announced today that over 100,000 Americans died from overdoses in the past year. Opioid deaths show the largest growth at 35%, followed by synthetic opioids, primarily fentanyl. In the past year, fentanyl was involved in more than 60% of overdose deaths. Fentanyl is cheaper and much stronger than heroin and other drugs. Other drugs are often laced with fentanyl without the user's knowledge. While overdoses soar, the price of overdose remedy naloxone has increased from $2.50 to $37 per pill. Pfizer's Narcan rose to $75. Leo Beletsky, a professor of law and health sciences at Northeastern University, said, quote, "This is a symptom of broader dysfunction in the U.S. pharmaceutical industry, where public health concerns are secondary to financial concerns." With China threatening Taiwan and Republican senators threatening America's credit rating, the Biden administration has its hands full. With more on these stories, it's Mary Sherman with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We're going to stay outside of their territorial waters, but we're not going to be intimidated or changed to not go up through the South China Sea.
President Joe Biden repeated his commitment to the One China policy on Tuesday, where the U.S. does not recognize Taiwan's independence but commits to helping the island defend itself. China has flown a large number of military aircraft into Taiwan's airspace recently, raising questions over whether U.S. forces would ever intervene in a potential conflict. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says the government could default soon after December 15th, nearly 2 weeks later than she initially predicted. The new timeline gives Congress more wiggle room to act to possibly raise the debt ceiling. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was again grilled by Republicans during a Senate hearing on border security policies. Chuck Grassley of Iowa accused the Biden administration of pursuing irresponsible, reckless, and dangerous policies.
When you run DHS like it's an abolish ICE fan club, you shouldn't be surprised when you have an immigration crisis.
Mayorkas countered that the department inherited the crisis from the Trump administration.
The immigration system, though, is fundamentally broken.
According to Customs and Border Protection, about 1.7 million undocumented immigrants tried to enter the U.S. this year, the highest number in six decades. High energy prices were the topic of a Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee hearing, where the acting director of the Energy Information Administration said he expects gasoline prices to retreat from current levels by the end of the year. On the issue of rising natural gas prices, Maine Independent Senator Angus King argued that increased fuel exports are harming Americans and strengthening global competitors.
We're racing blindly into a future and cutting off our most significant economic advantage.
King joined some Democrats in calling for an export ban or a release from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to ease energy prices. Wyoming's Republican Party has voted that Congresswoman Liz Cheney is no longer a recognized member of the GOP. Cheney voted to impeach former President Donald Trump and called on Republicans to reject allegations that the 2020 election was rigged.
Political leaders who sit silent in the face of these false and dangerous claims are aiding the former president, who is at war with the rule of law and the Constitution.
Back in D.C., Republican Paul Gosar could lose his spot on the House Oversight Committee.
He needs to be held accountable for his disgusting, outrageous, violent threat.
Democratic Caucus Chair Hakeem Jeffries says House Democrats will vote today on whether to censure Gosar for posting a Photoshop video depicting him attacking Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and President Biden. Gosar said he did not view the video prior to it being posted, explaining his intention was not to encourage violence, but rather reach a younger audience. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Jury deliberations continue for the second day at the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. Rittenhouse shot three people and killed two at a protest against Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. The trial has received national attention as a referendum on right-wing political violence. The defense argues that 18-year-old Rittenhouse killed Joseph Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber in self-defense. Rittenhouse was carrying an AR-15 automatic rifle. Rosenbaum and Huber were both unarmed. Rittenhouse faces charges for first-degree reckless homicide and use of a dangerous weapon. If convicted, he faces a mandatory life sentence. Rittenhouse has received support from right-wing politicians and media outlets who have portrayed him as a martyr. Kenosha Judge Bruce Schroeder has been widely accused of favoring the defense and has made a number of legally unusual decisions during the trial. Meanwhile, in Brunswick, Georgia, three men stand trial for the 2020 murder of 25-year-old black jogger Ahmaud Arbery. Gregory McMichael and his son Travis McMichael, along with neighbor William Roddy Bryan, chased Arbery in pickup trucks before cornering him and shooting him. Bryan's cell phone video of the incident is a key piece of evidence at the trial. Defense argues that the three white men were justified because property theft had been reported in the neighborhood. The defense also claims that they acted in self-defense. Arbery was also unarmed. KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants names.
Who's responsible? Who carboned the atmosphere? Who plasticed the ocean? Who clear-cut so carelessly all the roads connecting Vancouver, B.C. with the rest of Canada were closed by mudslides and folks had to go to America to get to the rest of their country? Who decided it was cheaper to make everything overseas and now the ships can't unload what we no longer make ourselves because someone decided truck drivers were easily replaced and could be treated like crap? Who keeps buying houses they'll never live in, raising the prices for the rest of us because it's a good place to put some of their excess riches? Who says this is a democracy? Who's profiting from COVID, limiting supplies so more die? Who's hogging the vaccines so more die? Who made the phrase human kindness a bitter joke? Who can make those responsible pay to clean up their messes? Who can fix all this if not us? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an interview with Dr. Sheila Vakaria on overdose deaths, followed by Noise Filter. Tonight's weather will be in the 40s and cloudy with a low chance of rain. Expect showers tomorrow afternoon. Today in 1983, the Zapatista Army of National Liberation was founded in the Mexican state of Chiapas. Named for an indigenous leader in the 1910 Mexican Revolution, the largely Mayan Zapatista Army controls an autonomous region in the state of Chiapas and largely protects indigenous land claims. The quote of the day is from Zapatista leader Subcomandante Marcos. In the cabaret of globalization, the state shows itself as a table dancer that strips off everything until it is left only with the minimum indispensable garments, the repressive force. Missouri Workers Center is a new group launching this week, which unites workers across racial lines in pursuit of better working conditions. Lily Bolke has more on the story.
A new group aims to bridge racial and geographic divides between Missouri workers to help bring economic prosperity to everyone. The newly launched Missouri Workers Center says it's pushing back against stereotypes and myths that can divide workers who share common interests. The group was joined at its first event by Heather McGee, author of The Sum of Us, What Racism Costs Everyone and How We Can Prosper Together. She says there is, in her words, a lie that prosperity for some has to come at the expense of others. McGee says it's being used to pit groups against each other, so fighting for fair working conditions and combating racism go hand in hand.
40% of American workers are paid too little to meet their basic needs for things like housing and food. 1% of the population owns more wealth than the entire middle class.
Missouri's minimum wage is $10.30 an hour after voters in 2018 approved a ballot initiative increasing the minimum wage to $12 an hour by 2023. It was previously $7.85. The Missouri Workers Center says it will advocate for such policies as paid leave and better working conditions. Terrence Wise, a leader with the Missouri Workers Center who works at a McDonald's location in Kansas City, says prior to his introduction to organizing for a better wage, his workplace was segregated by the misperceptions that if Black workers are thriving, white workers are losing, or if immigrant workers are thriving, U.S.-born workers must be missing out.
Not realizing at the time that we didn't sign each other's paychecks, we didn't write policy and legislation that dictate how our everyday lives were. All that was above us, the corporations, the elected leaders.
Wise adds it was important to realize that workers have to come together to demand change. In his own career, he says it's made the difference of earning $16 an hour instead of less than $8. Wise says campaigns like Fight for 15 in a Union are making similar progress across the nation. This is Lily Bolke with Missouri News Service.
The Campaign for College Opportunity released a report today that shows that Latinx students have made huge gains in higher education. However, there are still major inequities to address. Here's Suzanne Potter with more.
Latinx college students in California made significant gains pre-pandemic, with jumps in college attendance and completion, but a new report says big gaps remain between white and Latinx students, particularly men. The 2021 State of Education for Latinx in California report found in the California State University system, four-year graduation rates for Latinx students have doubled over the past 5 years. However, Dr. Vikash Reddy with the Campaign for College Opportunity, which produced the report, notes the percentages are still low.
But that's still fewer than one in five Latinos and just 29% of Latinos who are graduating in 4 years from the Cal State University.
Only 14% of Latinx adults ages 18 to 64 hold a bachelor's degree or higher, but that number is likely to improve since Latinx students make up 43% of public college undergrads in the state. The report also found 89% of Latinx 19-year-olds have a high school diploma or equivalent, but only 44% of Latinx high school graduates met the A through G class requirements for UC or CSU. In higher ed, 72% of Latinx undergraduate students attend community colleges, so the report says those institutions are key to improving outcomes. Long Beach City College President Mike Munoz says his team noticed low enrollment from two feeder high schools, so they visited the 12th grade economics and government classes and had all students fill out an application.
We eliminated the college participation gap from these two high schools. We saw a 42% increase in enrollment from these focus schools at Long Beach City College.
The report also recommends hiring more Latinx college faculty and expanding access to Pell Grants for students who are part of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival Program, or DACA. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Congress voted this afternoon to censure Republican Congressman Paul Gosar over a video he posted to Twitter and Instagram. In the doctored anime video, Gosar is depicted killing colleague Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and attacking President Biden. The resolution passed on a party-line vote, with only Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger crossing party lines. Gosar lost his spot on the Congressional Oversight Committee and the Committee on Natural Resources. Gosar is a Trump loyalist with ties to the white supremacist Proud Boys and prominent neo-Nazis. Several of Gosar's Republican colleagues spoke in his defense today, including House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. McCarthy said of Gosar, quote, "He took the video down and he made a statement that he doesn't support violence to anybody." Ocasio-Cortez retorted, "What is so hard about saying this is wrong?" Just days after Biden pledged to reduce emissions in Glasgow, his administration is selling over 80 million acres of public water in the Gulf of Mexico for oil and gas drilling. The record-breaking sale could lead to the release of 516 million metric tons of greenhouse gases, as many as 112 million cars emit in a year. The baffling decision follows 3,091 new drilling permits issued on public land since Biden's inauguration. That's 10% higher than the rate under President Trump. At a primary debate during his candidacy, Biden said, quote, "No more drilling on federal lands, no more drilling including offshore, no ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period, ends, number one." Press Secretary Jen Psaki said the White House was forced to sell to comply with a court ruling, but legal experts disagree. Fossil fuel production on public lands accounts for nearly a quarter of America's greenhouse gas emissions. Violence continues today on the Poland-Belarus border, where thousands of individuals and families from the Middle East remain trapped between two armies. Refugees have been stalled at the border for over a week in sub-zero conditions. Several have died. In retaliation for EU support of 2020 protests against his dictatorship, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko offered visas and airfares to Iraqi, Yemeni, and Syrian refugees. Thousands of families accepted the invitation, believing they could cross from Belarus into the EU and eventually settle in Germany. They arrived on the Polish border to discover razor wire fences hastily erected by the far-right Polish government. Mainstream media outlets, as well as EU and Polish officials, accuse Belarus of using human beings as a political tool. That may be true, but instead of admitting immigrant families into the EU, Polish border guards have sprayed them with water cannons, purportedly laced with caustic chemicals. Likewise, Belarusian border guards have been recorded beating migrants. Belarus is a Russian client state, and U.S. analysts say the border crisis could not have been manufactured without approval from the Kremlin. Last week, Russia flew several nuclear-capable bombers over Belarus as a signal to NATO. Conversely, President Lukashenko backed off of threats to shut down Russian natural gas pipelines into Europe in accordance with Putin's demands. Fossil fuel exports form a crucial portion of the Russian state's income. EU states like Germany depend on natural gas pipelines through Eastern Europe for energy. However, the border crisis may be a tipping point for German acquiescence. Russia was shocked yesterday when Germany suspended approval for the controversial Nord Stream 2 pipeline, an undersea pipeline that would bypass Eastern Europe and undermine political leverage of countries like Ukraine. Taken in this broader context, the Poland-Belarus border crisis is one of several potential fronts in a conflict between Russia and NATO. For weeks, Russian military forces have massed on the border with Ukraine, sparking fears of a second invasion in less than a decade. Putin's government has seen Ukraine as a threat since a popular revolution in 2014 that swayed the government towards NATO and the EU. Russia sees Ukraine's potential membership in NATO as a massive security threat. Ukraine is also a crucial transport route for Russian natural gas exports, and Ukraine views its control over Russian pipelines as assurance for EU support in the event of another attack. Since Germany began to phase out nuclear power in the wake of the Fukushima disaster, the EU powerhouse increasingly overlooked Russian aggression to secure fossil fuel imports. By suspending Nord Stream 2, Germany joins the US in condemning Russian aggression in Ukraine. With tensions growing and armies massing, security experts are unable to predict Russia's next move. But for families at the Polish border, their lives depend more on whether the European Union will live up to its human rights obligations. Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland announced a new tribal advisory committee, which she says will strengthen nation-to-nation relationships between tribal nations and the Department of the Interior. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Department of the Interior announced Tuesday the formation of a new Secretary's Tribal Advisory Committee. Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland talked about the committee and other initiatives during the White House Tribal Nations Summit. Haaland says the administration is working to strengthen nation-to-nation relationships with tribes.
This first ever advisory committee will be the mechanism for tribal leaders to engage in routine and robust conversations directly with me, and as importantly, with future secretaries of the Interior. We have also announced consultations on improvements to the departmental manual to strengthen our consultation processes with tribes. It's important that the department's policy encourages early, robust, interactive, pre-decisional, informative, and transparent consultation.
Haaland says starting in January, she will begin convening tribal leader engagement sessions, which will be held 3 times a year with cabinet leaders. Following her announcement, Haaland Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs Brian Newland and other administration officials held a virtual listening session with tribal leaders. Tribal leaders also took part in a panel on climate change during the White House summit. Leaders advised the administration on ways they can work with tribes by giving tribes a greater voice in policies, legislation, international forums, and research. Leaders say they're also in need of infrastructure investments as their communities deal with the impacts of climate change. Gila River Indian Community Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis talked about impacts of fires, storms, drought, and flooding. He highlighted how his tribe in Arizona has taken a lead in responding to drought.
Too many times in the past, prior administrations have tended to heed our advice and leadership with reluctance, suspicion, and hesitation. Based on my experience, tribes can and should be given an opportunity to lead with their traditional and innovative wisdom, our history, our traditions, our values. Keep bringing us to the table early and pay attention to what we say, as this administration has been. And together, we can cooperatively help produce solutions that we're all seeking now.
Administration officials say there are current investments for tribes to tackle climate change in the infrastructure package signed by President Biden this week and resources in future grants and legislation. The 2-day White House Tribal Summit wrapped up Tuesday afternoon. Winter means wood burning for many rural and native communities who often rely on stove-generated heat, but that can mean harmful emissions. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, a $2.5 million grant will help Oregon State University researchers explore cleaner burning stoves.
The U.S. Department of Energy's Bioenergy Technologies Office awarded the 4-year grant. Nordica McCarty of OSU's College of Engineering says work will start next summer.
And ultimately end up sharing what we've learned so that the techniques and the strategies that we learn to reduce wood smoke
will then be applied in a variety of settings and through various industrial manufacturers as well.
McCarty says they're exploring the use of turbulent jets of air to make wood-burning stoves burn cleaner, even if they are overfilled or using wet wood. This can provide immediate and long-term benefits for underserved populations.
Cleaner air and better health in communities that rely on wood for heat.
Project partners include OSU Cascades in Bend and the Nez Perce Tribe based in Idaho. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 17, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael. The producer is myself, Ethan Sandweiss, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Dan Raphael, Antonia Gonzalez, Mary Sherman, Lily Bolke, Suzanne Potter, and Diane Bernard. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ethan Sandweiss. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's Althea Billings in conversation with Dr. Sheila Vicaria about drug overdose deaths.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a